Hello and welcome to episode 5 of our NHS Estates podcast series, where we will be discussing the latest guidance and best practice for managing land and property transactions in the NHS. I'm your host for today's session, and my name is Lisa Geary, and I am a partner in the NHS real estate team at DAC Beechcroft. I'm delighted to be joined by Victoria Armstrong, who is also a partner in our NHS real estate team. Today we're going to be talking about decision making and the management of the NHS estate and the requirements of estate code in terms of managing the estate effectively and efficiently. This is a really important topic as facilities play a key role in influencing the health and well-being of patients and staff, as well as delivering efficient and effective healthcare services.
Hi Lisa, this is very important guidance for NHS organisations as it sets out the regulatory framework, the ethical principles and the decision-making processes that they need to follow when dealing with land and property transactions. Estate Code provides best practice guidance on the decision-making processes within an organisation, governance and the management of NHS estate.
That's right, Victoria, and we're going to explain what these are and what they mean for NHS trusts. So, let's start with the first question. Why is it so important for NHS trusts to manage their estate well?
Well, NHS organisations should aim for an estate that is safe, compliant, sustainable and supports the delivery of high quality healthcare services. And this means that the estate shouldn't pose any risks or liabilities to the trust, its staff, its patients or the public. It also means that the estate should meet the legal and regulatory obligations that apply to it, such as planning control, fire safety, waste disposal, and environmental management. And the estate should contribute to the trust's objectives and performance, such as reducing costs, improving efficiencies, enhancing patient experience, and supporting clinical outcomes. And alongside that, trusts are expected to achieve continuous improvements and better efficiencies from the performance of the estate and the cost of construction. And this means that estate's directors need to be aware of policies and other drivers within their localities that affect the estate.
So what is the regulatory framework that NHS trusts have to operate within?
Well, the regulatory framework is the set of laws, statutes, regulations and codes that govern how NHS trusts can use their land and property assets. Estate code states that NHS trusts must operate within this framework to maintain a safe and compliant estate that supports the delivery of high quality clinical services. As we know, the NHS is constantly changing, both in terms of structure and constitution, and it is important that relevant estates personnel understand relevant legislation and regulations. Alongside that, they should also have a solid understanding of the structure, governance, and operating frameworks for their organisation. They affect the trust's ability to enter into legal arrangements and will impact on delegated limits and authorities. The trust's estates team should be aware of standing financial instructions, standing orders and the approvals processes within the organisation, which should be robust and transparent.
Thanks very much, Victoria. I really see that now. So NHS trusts have to follow these rules and regulations when they want to buy, sell, lease or use land and property for their functions. The guidance is clear that all land and property transactions should be supported by a robust business case, including an options appraisal relating to the preferred course of action, in order to provide an audit trail of decisions made and a rationale for each decision. But also alongside that, they also have to act ethically and responsibly. Is that right?
That's correct, Lisa. The guidance also sets out the ethical business conduct principles that trusts must adhere to when dealing with land and property transactions. And these principles are based on the values and standards of the NHS Constitution and the NHS Code of Conduct. And they centre around anti-bribery rules, meaning estates teams will need to be alive to that risk and will need to clearly document adherence to internal anti-bribery policies.
So NHS trusts have to act with integrity, transparency and accountability when dealing with land and property, and to prevent any form of bribery or corruption from occurring.
Exactly. And they also have to follow a clear and robust decision-making process that ensures that their transactions are lawful, rational and in the best interests of their organisation and the NHS as a whole.
So there is a lot for NHS Trust to take on board. How do they manage to do that?
So the guidance provides best practice on how trusts should make decisions concerning land and property transactions. And it states that decision-making processes should be clear and documented, with roles and responsibilities, delegated authorities and approval mechanisms defined and communicated. Decision-making processes should be of a high standard, with evidence-based business cases, options appraisals, risk assessments and value for money analysis conducted and reviewed. And they should be satisfactory for probity, governance and audit purposes, with due diligence, legal advice and external scrutiny having been obtained and recorded.
Thanks, Victoria. NHS Trusts have to make sure their decisions are well informed, well reasoned and well documented, and that they can justify and demonstrate them to their stakeholders and regulators. But they also have to consider the implications and consequences of their decisions for their organisations and the NHS as a whole, such as the impact on the quality and safety of healthcare services and patient outcomes, the alignment with the strategic objectives and priorities of their organisation and the wider health system, the compliance with the regulatory framework and the ethical principles that we discussed earlier, the financial and operational sustainability and viability of their organisation and the NHS estate, and then finally, the engagement and consultation with their staff, patients, public and partners, and the management of their expectations and feedback. So, essentially, it is important for NHS Trusts to make sound and responsible decisions that support the delivery of high quality healthcare services and the efficient and effective use of the NHS estate. Now, estate code also covers the general management of the estate, which includes particular topics such as property asset registers, legal title documents, maintenance schedules, security arrangements, health and safety requirements, insurance arrangements and sustainability management. These are all really important aspects for running the estate that NHS Trusts need to be aware of and comply with. NHS Foundation Trusts are part of the NHS but are free from central control, so they have the freedom to make decisions locally. A Foundation Trust will have the power to dispose of property, although this is limited by the classification of the property as a relevant asset for a CRS, a Commissioner Requested Service, which is one of the standard licence conditions. We don't have time to go into the detail of CRS, but essentially it is important for trust estate teams to be aware of any relevant CRS assets, because the trust must seek the approval of NHS England before disposing of those assets, unless a general consent has been issued covering the transaction. The disposal of any non-CRS assets does not require the approval of NHS England, but Foundation Trusts do need to follow NHS England's guidance. NHS Trusts also have powers to generate additional income for the purposes of the NHS, which will allow them to manage and deal with the estate in order to generate income for improving clinical services. Foundation Trusts are not bound by the Department of Health rules on income generation, but it is recommended that they use them as guidance. It is clear, however, that income generation must not interfere with the clinical duties and performance of the trust. So in terms of the decision-making process, NHS Trusts are subject to delegated limits. Victoria, can you tell us a little bit more about those?
An NHS Trust is required to obtain the approval of NHS England for any transaction above its delegated limit. Any relevant capital investment or property transaction should be set out in a business case. The delegated limit applies to capital investment and property transactions and the amount of disposal proceeds that can be retained by trusts. Those limits don't apply to foundation trusts, although they will be constrained by limited capital. estates personnel should liaise with finance colleagues to determine their organisation's delegated limits. NHS England itself has powers of approval for NHS Trust capital business cases up to a limit delegated by the Department of Health. Those limits are set through consultation with the Treasury. Any capital business cases over the delegated limit of NHS improvement will require approval by the Department of Health and Treasury. So in terms of procedure, it is important that all land transactions for all NHS organisations are properly addressed by the board, decisions are properly authorised and relevant paperwork completed. Standing orders and financial instructions might limit the ability to agree arrangements and the execution of documents. An estates team should know the limits of delegated authority from the board, the expenditure approvals process, relevant procurement rules, which may mean a transaction requires tender action, internal decision-making processes, and delegated authorities for execution. And it's really important that any individual signing a transactional document is authorised to do that. They should also be fully informed about the transaction and have support from professional advisors. It's also key that there is a separation of duties so that the person negotiating the transactional documents and the transaction should not also be the person signing the documentation. And an eye should be kept on conflicts of interest so that the individual signing should not have any interest in the outcome of the transaction. Estate management is a key responsibility of the board from a strategic and compliance perspective, and there really needs to be good communication between managers within the organisation so that the board have a full picture of the current standing of the estate, including amongst others that they know the estate, that they are aware of the costs associated with it, they are satisfied that all arrangements are properly documented, monitored, and contractual obligations are honoured. They should also be aware of the environmental impact of the estate, and they should be aware of the planning and compliance position of the estate. It's a key responsibility of the estates teams to ensure that the board are updated on this information on an ongoing basis. And this will provide a good basis for any approvals process, and it will ensure that strategic decisions are well informed. So there are tools and data sources that can help NHS trusts to manage their land and property assets effectively and efficiently. Lisa, could you run us through some of those?
Yes, there are a number of tools and data sources that NHS organisations can use to support their estates management. So these include, first, the NHS Premises Assurance Model, known as PAM, which is a self-assessment tool that helps NHS organisations to understand the efficiency, effectiveness and safety levels in which they manage their estate and how that links to patient experience. There is also the Estates Return Information Collection, known as ERIC, which is an annual data collection that provides information on the size, value, condition and performance of the NHS estate. The NHS Surplus Land Database is a database that identifies and monitors the surplus land and property within the NHS estate. And there are obligations on NHS trusts to ensure that they put details of any land that they wish to dispose of on the NHS Surplus Land Database before they are able to go to the open market. Fourthly, there is something known as the NHS Benchmarking Network, which is a network that provides comparative data and analysis on the performance and quality of the NHS estate and facilities. I'm also going to mention here Health Technical Memoranda and Health Building Notes, known as HTMs and HBNs. Now, Health Technical Memoranda give comprehensive advice and guidance on the design, installation and operation of specialised buildings and engineering technology used in the delivery of healthcare. And they will focus, or they do focus, on healthcare specific elements of standards and policies and best practice. And these memoranda apply to new and existing sites. Now, providers of healthcare have a duty of care to ensure the right governance arrangements are in place, and HTMs provide best practice on engineering standards and policy to manage this duty of care. Health building notes provide best practice guidance on the design and planning of new buildings and on the adaptation and extension of facilities. Now, in both cases, for both HTMs and HBNs, there are overarching notes and then a list of numbered notes and memoranda specifying in detail various elements, both relating to engineering and design and planning. So to conclude, these tools and data sources can help NHS organisations identify opportunities for improvement, to inform decision making, and to monitor and report on their estate's performance.
They are all really key for estates teams, especially in the context of the changing healthcare landscape and the evolving boundaries between acute and community care. And they can also help NHS organisations to optimise their land and property assets and to achieve efficiency savings and reduced costs, and also to support the delivery of healthcare closer to people's homes. And Lisa, what about the legal and regulatory framework that governs the management of land and property within the NHS? What are the main rules and principles that NHS organisations need to follow?
There are a number of legal and regulatory requirements that apply to the management of land and property within the NHS. These requirements set out the powers and duties of NHS organisations, the procedures and approvals for land and property transactions, the procurement and contracting rules, and the planning and development controls. And some of the key principles that NHS organisations need to follow are acting in the best interests of the NHS and the public to ensure value for money and probity in all land and property transactions, ensuring that they consult and engage with relevant stakeholders such as commissioners, providers, patients, staff, local authorities and the public on any proposals that affect the use or disposal of land and property, to comply with the relevant standards and guidance such as the NHS Premises Assurance Model, NHS Estate Code and the Health Building Note Series. It's also important that they consider the impact of land and property transactions on the delivery of healthcare services, the health and well-being of users and staff, and the environment and sustainability.
And we're focusing here on estate code. So Lisa, how can NHS trusts achieve the aims of estate code when it comes to managing the NHS estate? What are some of the key recommendations there?
Well, there are many recommendations, but I'll highlight a few of the main ones. First, NHS trusts should maintain accurate property asset registers, which are records of all land and buildings that they own or occupy, and their key characteristics such as size, condition, value and use. These registers are essential for planning, budgeting and reporting purposes, and they should be updated regularly and audited periodically. Secondly, NHS trusts should ensure that they have legal title documents for all their property holdings, which are documents that prove their ownership or occupancy rights, such as deeds, leases or licences. These documents are important for protecting the NHS trust's interests, resolving any disputes and facilitating any transactions such as disposals or acquisitions. Thirdly, NHS Trust should manage their maintenance schedules, which are plans for carrying out repairs, replacements and improvements to their property assets based on their condition, performance and life cycle costs. These schedules are important for ensuring that the estate is safe, functional and compliant, and that the Trust is making the best use of its resources and avoiding unnecessary expenditure. Fourthly, NHS Trust should develop security arrangements, which are measures for protecting their personnel, property and assets from theft, vandalism or harm in line with national standards. These arrangements may include physical security such as locks, alarms or CCTV, as well as procedural security such as access, identification or incident reporting. NHS Trust should also take steps to prevent trespass and illegal encampments on their property, following guidance provided by Central. Finally, NHS Trust must meet their health and safety requirements, which are the legal and ethical obligations to ensure the well-being of staff, patients and visitors, as well as the environment in relation to their property assets. These requirements may include fire safety, security, waste disposal and environmental management, amongst others. Trust should conduct risk assessments, implement policies and procedures, provide training and information, and monitor and review their performance.
And I think in addition to those, NHS trusts should also ensure that they have sufficient insurance arrangements in place, which are the means of covering the any potential costs of damage, loss or liability arising from their property assets. And that's typically through the property expenses scheme. And these arrangements are important for managing the financial risks and consequences of any unforeseen events such as fire, flood or negligence, in the same way as any building's insurance cover. NHS trusts can also top up with commercial insurance, it's probably worth saying. And finally, NHS trusts should manage their sustainability, which is the ability to meet their current and future needs without compromising the environment, the economy or the community. And this involves complying with legal requirements, reducing carbon emissions, such as through energy efficiency or renewable sources, and adopting sustainable design principles such as natural ventilation and daylighting for new and existing buildings. It also involves demonstrating good corporate citizenship, such as engaging with stakeholders, supporting local communities and promoting social values.
Well, that's all we have time for today. Thank you very much for joining us. We hope that you have found this session useful and we look forward to welcoming you to the next podcast in our NHS Estate series.